Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by Rob Blanchett. Rob, how are you? Bank holiday weekend, nice rest up time for you or busy transfer stuff?
Bit of both, really. Bit of downtime, but like, is there any downtime at the end of a transfer window? Like, no, there isn't. The way it runs minute to minute. But here we are, we're at the end of the window and it's kind of a bit surreal, isn't it? Because we've been talking about transfers now for so long and you get into this tide, don't you, where it just flows and flows and it never stops. And it's going to stop soon. But then, of course, the day transfer deadline happens, the next day we'll be talking about what happens in the next window. So lots to talk about. And of course, Manchester United being very, very active.
Yeah, Man United have also played a game since we last spoke, and they will also play a game on transfer deadline day in the evening at Leicester. We'll reflect on the performance at Southampton, a win, surprisingly. A narrow win on Saturday. We haven't spoke since then. We'll maybe reflect on that a little bit later on and look ahead to the Leicester game. But yeah, approaching the transfer deadline on Thursday, United have some business to attend to. It looks like they'll be confirming two signings before we next speak. Antony and Martin Dubravka, we'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about, as unlikely as it may look at the moment, some potential other business incoming. There's some weird stuff out there at the moment, weird stuff going on. We've been talking about Frankie de Jong all summer and Memphis Depay. Both have flown to London. Not for Donny van der Beek's wedding. Why are they flying to London? Odd. We'll also talk about a new name. We haven't talked about Victor Osimhen before, Rob, I don't think, on this show. But George Mendes is trying to shock Cristiano Ronaldo to the entire world before the transfer deadline closes. And Napoli, there's some weird talk out there at the moment about some swap deal and Man United paying all of Ronaldo's wages and buying Osimhen. That's not going to happen. But we'll talk about Victor Osimhen himself. I think he moved to Napoli for like 70 million quid like 2 years ago. So he's going to be an expensive buy. I don't think United have really got that kind of cash burning in their pocket, but you never know. Crazy things have happened. We'll talk Aaron Wan-Bissaka. We'll talk any more transfer business potentially coming in or out. And like I said, we'll talk about Southampton and Leicester as well. The defense actually quite impressed me the other day, Rob. I don't know whether you want to touch on that a bit later on, but subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, Google, Spotify and the likes, and watch us on YouTube twice a week on Tuesdays and Fridays too. So head over to the channel, hit the like button, join the community, leave a comment and subscribe. And the link should be in the description of this episode if you're listening on an audio platform. And follow us on Twitter @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B and @PromisandMU. Rob, let's start at the top because we're recording this Tuesday morning. So we might even, by the time this is released, have Antony confirmed as a Man United player. Over the weekend, or last Friday, he forced Ajax's hand, basically, with an interview and some comments he released. And that has now helped convince Ajax to play ball. They've agreed a deal with Man United worth 100 million euros. I think it's 95 million euros plus 5 in add-ons. It's a hell of a lot of money. We talked about that the other day, whether he's worth it or not, but your initial reaction, because we've seen him turn up at Carrington on Monday night as well. And there's been some leaked CCTV footage of him turning up at the reception area, which is a little bit weird, but we're expecting that this will be confirmed on Tuesday at some point. And if it has been confirmed already, you know, it's literally, we're recording this Tuesday morning. Like I say, it could be confirmed by 10 o'clock in the morning or something like that. So what's your initial reaction to this, Rob? Because as much as it is a hell of a lot of money, I quite like this signing. Do you?
I really like the signing. Like, it's quite funny, isn't it, with Antony and really with United's window in general, is that we did say months and months ago this was the player that Man United wanted. This was the number one target. So even when there was a lot of noise around De Jong, it still continues to be noise around De Jong. It was Antony that they really wanted. He was going to be the star replacement for Ronaldo. That was their way it was going to be. Now, of course, they don't work position for position. We know what Antony does. We know what Cristiano does. But this was Man United looking towards the future. A player they could bring in now that could have impact, that knows the manager, that the manager loves. He's one of his boys, like Martinez is. It's the same vibe. But I like the signing, yes. Why? Because I think that this is a player that you can get your teeth into, that you can make better amongst a function of players in their lower 20s, mid-20s, building around more experienced players like Casemiro. So this is the fragile thing about transfer windows. This is starting to look like a good window for Man United. So United fans have been disaffected now for weeks and months. We've sat on here and said, how dare they do this? And why have they not done that? And they should be spending money and they should be blah, 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 blah. But the structure looks really good. And I do think with Antony, with the World Cup year coming, that there's a big motivation for him to come to Old Trafford and to show what he can do. Because there still is some doubt about him. Like, let's be honest, it's a big fee. And I think 2 or 3 years ago, this fee doesn't happen, nowhere near. He is more like a £50 million footballer rather than an £80 or £90 or £100 million footballer. So he's got to prove it now. And I think that Ten Hag will be really pleased to get another player through the door that can help him play Ten Hag football, which is, of course, the problem with the existing squad.
I do like the fact that I've liked Antony for a while. I mean, even when he was playing in Brazil, he had a big fuss over him. He joined Ajax, I think it was for... Yeah. 20-odd million or something like that. I can't remember exactly the number, but, you know, when I saw at the time that he joined Ajax, I was like, oh, he's going to move for a lot of money in a few years' time. And that's exactly how it's turning out. It just so happens to be that it's Man United who are paying the money.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at the business that United have done, and I do agree with you, Rob. I think that it's actually turning into a good transfer window. If you strip away all of the context of they spent 3 months, 4 months trying to sign Frankie de Jong and still haven't, and they've overspent on Casemiro, Antony, and Lisandro Martinez. Probably, you know, they probably overspent on them. But when you strip it away and then look at not the first choice 11, but the 11 you'd expect Ten Hag to turn to if everyone was fit, it's a lot more balanced than it's ever been in terms of having a left-footed centre-half, left centre-back. That's what Ten Hag wants in Lisandro Martinez. Having a solid left back in Malacia, you've got a defensive midfield presence, which United haven't had for 5 years, in Casemiro. You got Christian Eriksen, a ball player. I still think they need more in there, but you've got somebody on the left hand or on the right hand side who's left footed, offers that kind of balance for a fullback to overlap. And they still have a few problem positions in, I think, next summer, if they look at a goalkeeper, a right back, a centre mid, and a striker, I don't think they're too far away from, you know, having a team which they can really start to progress with. I agree with you. I think they've had a decent transfer window, but yeah, the money and the pressure that's going to come with it for Antony. I just hope that Ten Hag can maximise his potential, and I know his goal numbers and his assist numbers aren't exactly amazing for someone who's coming from the Eredivisie, but United fans need to have a bit of patience with him, don't they?
Of course they do. And I think whenever there's a transfer fee mooted now, a Manchester United's name are put to it, it's going to go up, isn't it? It's going to be a silly figure. But this has been like this for the start of time. When Man United bought Rio Ferdinand from Leeds United for 30 million, which was a world record for a defender at that time, that was massively overpriced, you know, hugely. And that was a long time ago. And Man United were desperate for a centre-back. And they went and paid the money for Rio. And that kind of worked out all right, didn't it? Same with Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney got offered a deal by Newcastle. Huge deal. Man United needed to step in. They paid a ridiculous price for who was literally a young boy from Everton. So sometimes you do just have to do the deal because of your needs and the development side of it. And I think for me, that's the bit with Antony I like the most, is that you're not getting the finished article, but you're getting someone that's worked really well with this manager in the past already. They know each other. There is a connection there. And it allows you to do technical and tactical things differently on a football pitch that Man United have done in recent years. So we bought a right-sided forward not so long ago in Jadon Sancho for a lot of money. And now we're going to bought another right-sided forward for a lot of money. But we do know that the flexibility in that front line will allow Ten Hag now to play a different style. That wasn't there only a few weeks ago when we went into pre-season. There were still a lot of these questions about gaps. Where are your gaps? And you're right. We still do need players that can pass the balls. You know, that this is why the De Jong thing will burn until the transfer deadline day, till the minute, especially when he's in the UK. That's going to be there in everyone's mind. And United might still be active, but they've spent, what, $225 million now around that amount mark in this window. That's not a small amount of money. And I think that Ten Hag himself will feel pretty pleased with bringing in around, what, 5-6 players that he can use now, whilst also letting 12 go. Because I think that's the other side of this, is making sure you balance the books. I was thinking last night, Scott, seeing Cavani sign and going to La Liga, I was thinking, well, they could have got another year out of Cavani now. You know, could have let Ronaldo go, yeah, and said, it's all right, Cristiano, if you want to go, bye, mate, thanks a lot, give us the number 7 back before you go, pulling it off his back, giving it to Jadon, and then saying to someone like Cavani, well, give it another year, mate, and give it another year, and we'll pay your wages, and you might be able to score some goals for some, play some more minutes. The reason why he left was because of Ronaldo. So, you know, you're in it's a silly situation, isn't it? But this is where Man United are, and they are still looking for a centre forward.
We'll talk about that. It's later in the agenda, because actually something that we spoke about, Rob, off before we started, has just come up on my Twitter timeline as a potential proposal. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. One thing I will say now is you can probably look at, and especially after the Southampton game, you can probably look at the team now and think, most of those positions pick themselves, especially after Antony and the Casemiro signings, when everybody is fit. So you have like an 11 there, maybe barring left back, maybe barring the center forward position, a team that picks itself when everyone is fit. And that's the kind of team that Ten Hag will be looking to rely on. And obviously they do still have problem positions to address later in the future, because I went to that Southampton game the other day, and United didn't really have any control throughout, unless it was the first 15 minutes after half time when they actually scored. But Southampton really pinned them back. United didn't have any real ounce of control, so they do lack that bit of midfield. Maybe they'll address it before the window closes, or maybe this Frankie de Jong saga will continue on and on. He didn't start for Barcelona the other day, came on for 30 minutes. Can you imagine now if he stays and he doesn't get his first team position through January? What if he doesn't play and then Louis van Gaal goes, oh, well, you're not playing football, you're not coming to the World Cup. What happens then? I'm sure that won't happen, but, you know, he said that to Jurrien Timber. I'm sure we'll be back in for him at some point as well. But yeah, it's positive in a sense. United have come off the back of two wins. They play Leicester on Thursday night, and then Arsenal the weekend. Should be a good game. Hopefully United can go into that with another win behind them. But obviously goalkeeper will be an issue that needs to be solved at some point. David De Gea has a year left on his contract with an option, but we kind of know the mistakes that De Gea has made already this summer. They have signed a backup for him though, or are going to sign a backup for him before the transfer window closes. Martin Dubravka on loan with an option to buy or an obligation, depending on how many games he plays, as we understand it. He's not going to be first choice, though, is he?
No chance. No chance. He wasn't first choice at Newcastle. He's not going to be first choice at Man United. It's purely to have an experienced goalkeeper in your ranks that, you know, is box fresh ready, that you can get out there if De Gea gets injured. Because that's always on the table, isn't it? Your goalkeeper, if he's your primary number one, you've got to have someone that can come in long term just in case. That's why Man United had Dean Henderson around last year rather than let him go out on loan, which probably would have been the better choice in hindsight. But Dubravka, decent goalkeeper, 33 years old, very experienced, better on the deck than De Gea. But I don't think those things particularly matter. It's more of a case of just having someone week to week on your bench that can help you if you get into some kind of problem.
Yes, indeed. Let's you know, we're expecting to see Dubravka coming in on loan, probably might even be today or tomorrow.
United, I think Dubravka and Antti are going to get done today. I think United want to get those two absolutely finished today, medicals, and you know, presented to the press and whatnot. And of course, it's one of those things. Dubravka's going to kind of, I think, just scoot in under the radar because Anthony's going to take all the limelight. That's probably how it should be.
Can I just go back to Anthony? I didn't actually miss a question that I wanted to ask you. What do you make of how he forced his way out of Ajax?
I'm totally all right with it. I'm okay.
Will he do
with
that
it?
To Man United in 4 years' time?
If he does, then I'm totally all right with it. I think the thing is, again, this is how I forget how fans react to stuff, isn't it? And how fans react to football and the business. And this is what we've said about the transfer window as well, is that fans get in a fever and get hyped up about the players they want. And when they don't get the players, it's a disaster. And they believe nothing's happening in the background. There's no business going on. It doesn't work like that at all. Anthony said from day one to Ajax, I'm leaving. He said it from day one and they went, no, you're not. Now that's normal. That's a normal situation. And then it's a bit of pull and push, isn't it? So Timber said that he might like to go. He talked to Ajax and then he stayed and signed a new deal. That's how it works. So Anthony, in the earliest parts there, wanted to go to the Premier League because it's a World Cup year and his favourite boss in the world is at Man United. So it was just a case of, can you construct a deal around that, the premise of that? I've got no problems with players saying, I don't want to play for you anymore. If a player doesn't want to play for you anymore, hence Cristiano, yeah, says, I don't want to be at Man United anymore, I'm not going to get mortally offended. It's a job. Go and do your job somewhere else then. Just go quietly, you know, we'll help you. But you know, I think this is where the emotions maybe spill over. Ajax fans are not sat there today going, oh no, we'll never see Anthony play again. They understand at their football club that this is just how it is. You sell players and you buy new players. You buy your stars, create your next set of superstars. I think at Man United, because we are such a Disney World type football club and it's a reality TV show, it then becomes something much bigger, doesn't it? Oh, he forced his way out. He must be a terrible person. No, he just wants to play for Man United. So, like, okay, we're paying him a lot of money. He's going to be on a big wage. Now the proof's in the pudding, Scott. Come to the Premier League, prove that you're worthy of all of this attention and this big transfer fee.
Doesn't seem like those signings will be ready for the Leicester game, but Anthony needs a work permit, this kind of thing. So fingers crossed, he'll play against Arsenal, probably from the bench, I would imagine. Casemiro might be in starting then. But let's move on to some other potential arrivals. Rob, I don't know where you stand on whether you're expecting any more. But let's talk Frankie de Jong and Memphis Depay deciding to fly to London on Monday. Now, both have been linked with United consistently. Memphis, perhaps not so consistently, but more frequently in the last couple of weeks. And I called it at the start of the summer that he'd be eventually a Man United target, which is the case. What can we read into this then? Because they were meant to be going to Donny van de Beek's wedding, which was a lie. Why would you get married in London when you're Dutch and in between two games in about 4 days, 5 days? Doesn't really make any sense. Why are they here then?
Why are they here? Supposedly on holiday. But who goes on holiday to London from Barcelona when you don't need to because you've got 2 or 3 days off? Funny how they've got days off around a transfer window ending, isn't it? Well, look, they're here in the UK for potential medicals, if not that they've had medicals already with potential football clubs. That does not mean that transfers are going to get done. That just means you can speed it all up. So a medical is not a deep thing. You go to a private hospital somewhere in the UK. It might not even be in London. You're just flying into London and you get seen and you get done and you get boxes ticked and insurers are happy and you can progress deals much, much quicker. And I think maybe this is where football clubs are getting smarter, Scott, is that the old days of someone driving up the motorway with 3 hours to go to try and get a medical done over the line so they could sign someone. I think clubs are pushed away from that a little bit more because they want to know what they're buying, don't they? So will these two players leave Barcelona? What we understand at the moment is that Frankie de Jong will probably still be at Barcelona after the end of this transfer window, which in itself is kind of perverse. But he's in the UK for a reason. He's not in the UK for Donny van de Beek's make-believe wedding that Man United would never authorise in a million years. You know, that was not happening in the middle of a season. And Donny van de Beek, as you said, they would get married probably in Amsterdam, not in London or Manchester. But again, van de Beek, with De Jong, very public, getting on a plane, showing himself to the world. You got to realise these superstar footballers, Scott, when they get on planes, you don't normally see them. It's normally done in a way that no one sees them. They get on planes and they travel around the world and they do it. So they do it concealed. De Jong pushing his bags into an entrance with a kind of wry smile on his face. It's all done deliberately. There's a deliberacy around it. So where will he go? Who knows? Manchester United have still got money. Like, you know, people say about United have not got money. Oh, they've run out now. They've spent 225 million. I think it's been proven that no one knows what Man United are going to spend. No one knows. No journalist, no fan channel. No one knows, because if you need it and you can make it happen, you make it happen. So that's where they are with De Jong. They want this player. If they can make it happen, they will. And if they can't make it happen, then he'll probably stay there, or he'll go to Chelsea. He might even go to Bayern Munich. Probably not Bayern Munich now, but Man United definitely still on the table. Let's wait and see.
Odd one, to be fair. I mean, they could quite easily have avoided all of the circus around this by not going to London. But yeah,
but they've done it deliberately. Like, they've done it in a very public way. And I actually think that that's a bit of a slant at Barcelona. So it's a bit like, all right, these are our options. This is where we'd have to be. We're going to London. That's kind of normal course of action in the transfer window. It's just that the high profile nature of the De Jong deal means that wherever he steps foot, people are going to look and take note, isn't it? You know, he's only got to like something on Instagram and people are writing stories about him. People think, oh, you know, he likes Casemiro going to Man United. We talked about that ourselves. But there is some truth in that. It's all kind of, it's like a poker game, isn't it? Like, who's got the best hand? So I think De Jong is playing that game with Barcelona himself at the moment, because Barcelona want him gone. They still want him gone, but they would also renegotiate his contract if he's willing to play for peanuts. So, you know, we say peanuts.
Which has been ruled out again, him playing for less money.
It's been ruled out again, but the Spanish side of the story are still pushing that. They're still saying if De Jong stays, he will only stay if he renegotiates his contract to maybe a level of a mid-level Leicester City player in the Premier League. That's the kind of wages they're talking about. So that's probably not going to happen, but I think this is also why he is in London and in the UK, because if he goes anywhere, it will be to one of those two football clubs that play in the Premier League. And it makes sense to be in the UK. And I think that's probably on the advice of his agents, because you can go on a private jet and fly to Manchester or fly to London from Barcelona. But it's a whole lot easier, isn't it, if you're already there. See, his girlfriend or his wife is with him, you know. So that's another thing. Like, that doesn't normally happen on just little football excursions. There's other things going on there. But I said it early in the window, I'm going to say it again. Frankie de Jong will probably get done wherever he goes on transfer deadline day, because that's the nature of this deal.
However Man United manage to do it, if they manage to do it, we'll see. I mean, yeah, they've spent a lot of money, 225 million you mentioned there, Rob. But, like, you know, we've said this for the entire summer. They wanted Frankie de Jong so much, and there is still a Frankie de Jong-sized hole in the United midfield. That if he became available, I just think United would try and do it, you know, whichever they way would, they could.
I think they are trying to do it. Like, we say, oh, they might try and, like this is a future tense thing. They are trying to still do that deal. And I think the whole thing is that Man United know that if they get Frankie de Jong on transfer deadline day, they win the transfer window. That's it. And they love it. They love it at Man United. It's a bit weird, because you kind of think, well, why would you want to do that? But Man United is a commercial business. Love these games. They love winning the transfer window. So you get Frankie de Jong on the last moment. Can you imagine how smug they'd all be at United, you know, in the boardroom? Like, oh, look, we've got protests going on and people saying that these owners should leave and all this. But look what we just did, because we're Man United and we're not even in the Champions League. So there's still that at play. And Memphis as well. Like, United are looking for a number nine. So it wouldn't be too strange if he ends up at Manchester United. We know that United inquired about him a few weeks ago. So if he's a free transfer, what do you reckon, Scott? You called it. You said earlier on it's the type of deal that they'd like to do. And we knew that they'd inquired. So a free transfer for a player like Memphis Depay, again, in a World Cup year, he needs to play games at high level. You need a number nine. You've just bought Antony on the outside. These things do add up.
Yeah. United are looking for a flexible forward. And we are, you know, obviously there's not a lot of time left yet. We are talking in a little bit of, not fantasy land, but just thinking, you know, a lot would have to fall into place for a deal like that to come off. And that's a lovely little tie-in to the next section. Victor Osimhen. Now, plays for Napoli, highly rated forward, 23 years old. About a 1-2 record for Napoli since joining from Lille for about 70 million quid 2 years ago, which at the time was, wow, that's a lot of money, especially for Napoli and especially for an Italian team, you know. Jorge Mendes is trying to find Cristiano Ronaldo a way out, and these two stories are interlinked. So in my notes, I've written Osimhen Ronaldo swap nonsense, because there was a point a few days ago where Jorge Mendes had suggested to Napoli, according to reports from Italy, that Man United would pay 85% to 100% of Ronaldo's salary, send him to Napoli, and buy Victor Osimhen for 100 million or 120 million euros. And I was like, what world are you living in? That is absolutely not going to happen. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, at the start, something has popped up on my timeline suggesting that Jorge Mendes is now suggesting loan swap. Now, we talked about this, Rob, before we started recording. I mean, I do still think this is in kind of fantasy land for what United are maybe capable of in this window. But potentially, Ronaldo really wants a way out. I think Erik ten Hag, in his press conference, I was there the other day, he was asked outright, will Ronaldo stay? We hope so, he said. And then it was put to him, surely it's your decision. Well, I hope he stays with a little delay. And he's not confirming that he wants to keep him. I think we both know, Rob, that United would prefer he goes.
Yeah.
Ronaldo wants to go. He's going to be third-choice striker. You know, he's going to be third-choice striker after Rashford and Martial probably at the moment. And he just looked at Southampton. You know, there was that one moment where he tried to out-sprint a Southampton centre-back and got, you know, just lost his legs, like he was going to fall over. And it looked a bit sad. You know, age gets us all, doesn't it? But Victor Osimhen, Ronaldo swap. Rob, what's your thoughts on this? Because I would absolutely love Victor Osimhen at United. I would absolutely love it. But I don't see a way that it happens. Is this loan swap a potential goer?
Yes. It is. And funnily enough, because this is what we always say about football being, you know, sometimes stranger than fiction, isn't it? Because it's about wants and needs. So where do we stand with Cristiano? Where do we stand with him? We know where we stand with him. He wants to go. He's wanted to go for a long time. And Man United have spent enough time looking at what Ronaldo does in this project already, with the manager knowing that this player cannot run for you. So, like, as you just said there, I'm glad you brought up that little bit, because it reminded me of like a kind of giraffe in the Serengeti running away from the lions, you know, and not being able to do it as its legs fail when it falls over. I think Cristiano would like to be able to do those things. Like, I think he'd like to be able to say, you know, stick two fingers up to the world and go, look at me, I'm still me. But he's not him. He's not. It's over. You cannot play in a pressing system. And we've already seen in this very small sample size, haven't we, the Premier League, that Man United, if they don't press effectively in the first two games, they lose. If you press effectively against a team like Liverpool, you win. And then you work hard against Southampton, who are one of the best energetic teams in Europe. And you get the victory because you stick to your fundamentals and your principles, even though you didn't play that well. So this tells you, this is not Cristiano steps back in the team in the next game and you start playing Cristiano ball again. Does not happen. So can this deal happen? It can happen, because there's no doubt that Ronaldo wants out. And you've got to let him go now. I think that this is the thing. There's a lot of people on Twitter and socials and whatever shouting and screaming on YouTube about how you've got to keep Cristiano, that he's a serial winner and all of this. Do not keep players that don't want to play for you. Stick to that.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's fundamental. He doesn't want to play for us. Let him go. Take the shirt off his back and take, more importantly, Scott, the £500,000 he takes from us of wages every week and go give it to someone else. Give it to someone else who wants to play for you. So, Osman, I'm with you totally. He's a really, really good centre forward that would fit between a Sancho and an Antony like a glove.
That's an exciting wing pairing, by the way. I didn't say that earlier. Exactly. Both 22. Yeah.
So, you know, we don't always want to talk blue sky football, but the whole point of this is it's about building something. And this is not about the next game. And this is not about the games in a month or two or three. This is really for the next year and beyond. So how are you doing this project? What are you doing? Well, Cristiano can't be part of that, first and foremost. Whether he stays or goes, doesn't matter. He can't be part of that long term. So you've got to bring in someone that can be. And Man United do understand that they need a centre forward because Martial does get injured. We're seeing that. I think Martial will play lots of games this year. And I think Rashford looks fitter. He'll probably play through the centre and kind of dovetail left and centre. And Sancho, I think, will swap backwards and forwards, mm-hmm. left and right, and we'll see that flexibility. But to have that flexibility now, you need a centre-forward to at least have that to build around. And I think this is why there's no kind of depth in the deal with Osman at the moment. You know, it's not something that Man United have massively explored. But if they could make the money work and say tomorrow Frenkie de Jong just joins Chelsea. Yeah, say Frenkie de Jong today, as we're talking, is at Cobham. Having a medical, yeah? And that's happening. And Man United still think we need to win this transfer window. And we've got this money. It's ready. Oh, no. This forward suits what we want to do. Do not be surprised on transfer deadline day if they do that deal. Because I think Ronaldo will probably leave simply because of his desire to go. And that Man United want that wage back. And they should do. They should be like, we don't want to keep you, mate, to sell shirts. You know, you're not going to help us win football matches this year in the same way you didn't help us win football matches last year. So let's all move on. I said to you, didn't I, Scott, off camera? You know, this could have been one where you kept Cavani for another year. Cavani would have fitted this perfectly if you'd kept him for another year and said, all right, Ronaldo, take your wage, take your shirt and off you go. And Cavani, you know, you can play once every three or four games and off the bench and be the energy player up top. How good would Cavani have been between Sancho and Antony in a 4-3-3. It'd have been brilliant.
So, yeah, it actually would have been, yeah.
So you've made a bad football choice, again, for the wrong reasons. But, you know, we're not going to talk about that too in-depth because Cavani's gone somewhere else and Ronaldo will go somewhere else. But Man United need to kind of keep this project on track now. I like what we're seeing in the formation. The 4-3-3 works really well. I think Antony fits that. I think you need a centre-forward that fits that. And you need a De Jong-like player to help Casemiro in the centre of the pitch. Means you're a lot closer though, Scott, isn't it? A lot closer than you were the day Erik ten Hag started. You've gone and got some significant business done.
Yeah, just on Ronaldo, before we move on, you mentioned there that you expect him to go. How do you pick one way, most likely way? What do you expect to happen there? Is it a mutual termination? We saw Ross Barkley's contract at Chelsea terminated mutually on Monday. I'm not comparing Ronaldo to Ross Barkley, but, you know, that didn't work out, did it? And it's looking at the moment as though Ronaldo wants to go. As much as I'd like to see Victor Osimhen, I'd make it massively unlikely unless George Mendes is an actual magician. He's pulled off some stuff before.
He is. He is a magician,
I guess. Yeah. what are you expecting? Do you think United would even go to the lengths of cancelling Ronaldo's contract?
Okay, the issue legally when you cancel contracts is generally with bonuses and one thing or another. It's very hard to cancel a contract because you're normally liable as a football club. So even players like tend to like to move within the normal function of transfers because they want to get their signing on fee, they want to get all those things done. This is a bit more of a unique situation where Cristiano will probably almost definitely waiver everything. He's not going to say to Man United, oh, well, you cancelled my deal, so therefore, no. I think this will be your general kind of mutual cancellation of a contract because Man United do not want to pay him any more money and he wants to go somewhere else. So I think that's the most likely outcome. I think that's already been negotiated. I think it's just a case of, can you find the club to go? Are you going to be happy, which will allow us to be happy? And then we can go and do some other business because we want that money back from you. And that's really what it is. With Ronaldo's deal, there is a lot of weird add-ons in there that would have to be negotiated and have been being talked about behind the scenes for a long time. So let's see what happens with Cristiano. But I think it's got to be a free transfer. It's got to be a kind of a mutual agreement between the club and the player that will then allow his next club to pay him the overinflated huge wage that he will want for the next year or two. Because that's the truth, isn't it? If he goes to Napoli, Napoli are going to have to like mortgage the house to keep Cristiano happy. Because, you know, can you then win with him? Well, yeah, you can, because they'll sell a billion Napoli shirts in Naples and he'll be a kind of Maradona type figure there, yeah, won't he? You know, yeah. Like he'll be viewed as a kind of, demigod. He is at United, but I think at United there's some more realism around it as well with some of the fan base. But yeah, going to back to Italy, it's an option for him. And let's see what happens. I think he'd like that option, but it's up to his agent to do all the spin that's already happening behind the scenes, but to get it over the line and allowing everyone to kind of shake hands and have a hug and say goodbye.
Let's wrap up the transfer section. I don't know whether there's any more transfer business you want to talk about, but I do want to bring up Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah.
He has been signed for 50 million quid 3 years mm-hmm. ago, I think it was. Good defender, etc., etc. But, you know, he's lost his place under Ten Hag.
Mm-hmm.
Diogo Dalot, his attacking output has obviously been put under scrutiny for the last year, maybe 18 months, 2 years, you know. United have had interest in him from former club Crystal Palace, and I know that I was under the impression that probably Crystal Palace would end up bringing him back on loan. West Ham, some interest there as well, but United apparently have said no to the interest that's come in from them. And we're also seeing news from Spain, going back to Barcelona, of potential swap deals between Wan-Bissaka and Sergiño Dest, which is a little bit wild, and Wan-Bissaka to Barcelona. But what do you make of this, Rob? I mean, I was expecting him to go, but if United can't get a replacement for him, they would only have Diogo Dalot there. So,
yeah,
you know, do you think they'll be able to find a replacement in time, or is Wan-Bissaka going to stay?
I think Wan-Bissaka is going to stay. United did inquire about Dest, which I think is why that's been put together in Spain, 2 and 2 to make, you know, 37. Like, no. But I think with Wan-Bissaka, the jury's still kind of out. Because as bad as he was last season, and he was never a £50 million footballer, we knew this when he came, it was all again about potential, wasn't it? About what can you do to develop players. And I think that Man United are not as low on him as maybe, say, the fan base is. So the fan base is kind of done. We want another right back. But you're at the end of the transfer window now. Your options are really limited. You've decided that Ethan Laird is to go somewhere else. So they've done that already. That's that loan. Are you going to just loan Wan-Bissaka out? He's not a problem for wages, Scott. Like, this is not, he's not a player on extortionate wages where you think, well, we can't keep him in the squad just in case. So why would you let him go on loan to Crystal Palace and help Crystal Palace? I don't know. What we're hearing is that Wan-Bissaka will probably stay. So he will stay to add competition. He'll be more of a defensive entity, of course, than Dalot, what he does. But there will be an expectation to play the kind of football that Ten Hag will play. And I think that Wan-Bissaka and Antony is a pretty good fit just for what they do. When you look at their metrics, they could help each other. Will Wan-Bissaka be a marauding, overlapping fullback? No, but we did see last year that he can do it. I think he got more assists than Dalot doing that last year, which is kind of the strange bit about the whole story about people wanting Dalot to be the starter. Now, it's good, isn't it? Dalot got the assist for Bruno in the Southampton game. So that was really good. That kind of that was one big plus point of seeing your fullback go wide in a kind of movement and get the ball to your number 10 coming late into the box to finish and put it in the bottom corner. Now that is training ground. That's been practiced over and over again. And then you've done it in a real match. Great. But until Man United buy a new right back, I think Aaron Wan-Bissaka will remain at Manchester United.
Can I just pick you up and where you
just said? That means he's gone now, probably. He's probably on his packing his bags on a plane to Crystal Palace as we speak.
And what you just said there about training ground, something coming off on the, from the training ground onto the pitch. How many times can you say that we've seen that out of Man United in the last few years?
And we've always said, haven't we, like when we watch them play, we're like, what do they do on a training pitch? What kind of, what's the style? What is Ole trying to get through to the players in terms of their form and function? Because that goal was all about Man United just opening up an opponent really quickly without a lot of fuss, fullback bombing on, getting the ball and playing the right ball into the box, which was to the edge of the area, not just whizzing it across or doing what I call like an Antonio Valencia, where you just literally smash it across and, you know, pray that someone gets hold of it or Wayne Rooney manages to tap it in. That those days have gone, but the modern fullback is a progressive. So you've got to get that ball from them to the other progressive on the pitch is the number 10. So you can make that happen. Rashford and Elanga were big parts of that by making the runs that were all designed on a training pitch. Yeah. So fans might not always catch that in the first instance, but that was the thing for me. I looked at it and went, that's great because that's a training ground move and it came off and you've won the game because of it. And there's nothing more you can sell to players than that, Scott. And you come and sit in the dressing room afterwards and say, I taught you that and you did it and we won. And players will be like little dogs, like, yeah, boss, brilliant. We'll do it again next week. So that was a great start. And I think that was good for Dalot. He needed that. And I think Aaron Wan-Bissaka might look at that and think, well, I probably could get the ball there and play it to someone on the edge of the box. I'm not that bad. You know, it was not that long ago. People were saying that I was the next best fullback in the country behind Trent Alexander-Arnold. That was only 2 or 3 years ago. So I think the boy's got a chance at Man United. And I hope he does. I hope if he does get an opportunity, that he proves a lot of people wrong.
Yeah, you could tell from, I know Dalo obviously was celebrating a goal, but it just looked like a kind of, the way he celebrated just looked like a kind of relief or...
like, oh!
Yeah, and...
I've been doing that for ages and it hasn't worked.
Like
and
some kind of achievement. I completely agree with you. It looked like it was practiced and it finally come off because it... United haven't really had too much of that. But let's talk more about Southampton. I'm guessing any other transfer business you want to touch on before we continue on?
No, not really. I think all we've kind of done all the big things there, haven't we?
Well, there you have it. That's our transfer window analysis. We will not be talking any more transfers until it closes. We'll be back on Friday morning to pick it apart. Maybe United will sign Memphis and De Jong or Osimhen and De Jong before the transfer window closes.
Or all of them.
Or none every of them. Single player in the world. we'll see. Or maybe they'll sign nobody, which looks, well, apart from Antony and Martin Dubravka, looks more likely at the moment. But yes, Rob, so positives on Southampton. I'm guessing you caught the game. You know, I weren't great, but there were some encouraging signs. I mean, it looks like I've written a case for the defence. Now, Lisandro Martinez and Malacia. I keep saying Malacia. Malacia.
It's my fault. I called him Malacia from day one. I think it's bright here now. I can't even see because it's got sun shining in my eyes, but go for it.
The pair of them looking pretty good. Dalo, we've just talked about. And Rafa Varane as well at right centre back has really started to show his experience. And Southampton had a few chances the other day, but they didn't really look in much danger of conceding. You know, and that's a good foundation to build off. We've obviously talked about Casemiro and Antony and the kind of shape of the team further ahead, but some encouraging signs, even though United didn't end up dominating the game and they just about won it thanks to Bruno's goal.
Yeah, and I think that what I liked about it is winning scrappy 1-0s is what gets you up the table. Like everyone wants to see beautiful football, constructed football, artistic football. But the truth is you win more scrappy games than those over a season and they're the ones that you win or lose. So Man United only a few months ago would have lost this game. There's no doubt about it. They've gone to Southampton. Southampton would have overpowered them in terms of work rate and Man United would have cried into their soup and that would have been that. And Ronaldo would have stood there, hands on hips, and or, you know, the same rubbish that we've seen over and over and over and over again. But what we did see is that they had a game plan, they stuck to it, and it paid dividends. 1-0 is okay, Scott, every week. Like, if you win 1-0 every week, you win a title. That's how it works. You know, you get 3 points. It's all about getting 3 points. So I think that this manager understands that. And I think he also understands that that is going to be the pressure here, that as he builds his squad and builds his team, implements tactics, implements style, implements philosophy, you've still got to keep winning somehow. So winning 1-0 at Southampton is absolutely fine. It was a really good goal. You know, I think that's the other takeaway, is that you think, yeah, we can do a little bit more than that. But I think also when you think that if you put Casemiro in there and just give yourself a little bit more solidity in the middle of the midfield, that if you don't get Frankie de Jong, and you're probably not going to, then you've still got a piece in there that can help you control football matches and allow the other attacking players to go and do their thing. And this is where Antony will be very useful as well, that if you've got just a stronger midfield hub of a fourth, if you're playing 4-3-3, let's say, for instance, that you play Eriksen a bit deeper for the season. And that's not what I want to see Christian Eriksen do, but that might be what happens. He is still the guy that can pass that ball out from the centre circle or that half of the pitch and play you quickly in to someone like Antony to go one-on-one. Because that's how they're going to play Man United. It's going to be counter-press, counter-press, counter-press. If they can do it, they're going to have to learn to keep the ball. And I think that's what we saw against Southampton, is that still not there.
Yeah, it wasn't there at all, was it?
Until you buy a midfielder that can really do that for you, you're going to have to maybe rely on Varane and Martinez to step out of the pocket with the ball, because they're probably better than McTominay and Fred at doing those things anyway. And then you've got now two players experienced in Eriksen and Casemiro to give you those extra pieces in the middle that you've not had for a long time. I know people talk about Matic, but Matic has not done that for me for a long time. You know, he had that at Chelsea. He had that in year one at Man United, but he tailed off so badly. And, you know, you could have kept a Paul Pogba or someone like that and had other options in there, but you're going this direction. You're going to have to buy a central midfielder either at the very end of this window or maybe in the next one.
Yeah, I mean, Casemiro had a cameo role, came in, made a couple of important blocks, tackles. There was one moment which I don't think many people picked up, because I was there, and he picked up the ball at the base of the midfield and fired a vertical pass between Southampton's midfield into, I think it was Bruno Fernandes, who controlled it like that, and United were kind of in. I can't remember exactly when it was, but I just looked at Casemiro and I was like, players can do that?
He can do that. And you know, the thing about Casemiro, and again, it's not talked about, and I don't know why, when you look at his metrics, he's actually a decent ball progressor. So when the ball's at his feet, he doesn't always turn or go back or just play safe. He will play out. And he's played in Real Madrid all these years. Like, that's what he's been told to do. That. It's in his DNA. He's a Brazilian, you know, so he's going to play those balls more often than not, I think. And they're not a risk ball, are they, either? It's not that ball where a manager says, well, if you play that ball, we could concede a goal because it's a silly ball to play. I think you'll see him carry the ball out a lot more than we ever realised, because he's got that in his game. And I think he'll also enjoy being that guy. I think he'll be like, I want to show I can do other stuff, but I'll also still do my defensive work. That's my job. But I'm going to link up here with the forwards. And that will allow him and Eriksen to dovetail a bit. It will allow Eriksen to go sometimes, Casemiro to sit. And it will allow Casemiro to sometimes go. And it will mean that one of those guys, either like Eriksen or Bruno, will have to just sit and be a little bit more patient. But I think we'll see some of that kind of progressive football this season, because the manager wants it and desires it. And that's what they're training towards.
Do you think Christian Eriksen's going to end up playing a bit more than he was anticipating if United don't sign a midfielder? Because I kind of looked at him and thought he'll play 60 here, 30 there, not 90. I think he played like 89 minutes the other day.
Christian Eriksen decided to come to Man United because the manager told him that he would be a starter pretty much every week. So that's that. So I think that this is the plan, but the plan wasn't for him to play as a deep line midfielder. So he's going to start most weeks, I think, but not doing the things that maybe he thought. So I think the idea was, like, you never talked about the 4-3-3. I still think that we'll see times where Eriksen or Bruno, but mainly Bruno, will play a false nine. So if you don't go and buy a striker, that's one of your big options on the table. Now, that allows Eriksen to still be a bit more progressive, either to play as a 10 or to play higher up the pitch. So I think they're going to rely on Eriksen to be that smart midfielder. So there's going to be times where I say to him, right, you're going to need to sit back a little bit with Casemiro, play some ball retention, and don't you dare lose it, because that's the problem with United over the years, is that they try and play ball retention, they look awful. But then the other side of this, Scott, is that he takes free kicks, he's part of set pieces, he's a player that likes to play in the final third. He was the one in Southampton, he had one of the best chances in the game, didn't he? And that was really coming from the number six position. So he had a really good opportunity to score. And obviously it was when the ball was pinging around and he made a late third man run. That's him playing as the six, yeah, playing as the 6-8. So I think that Ten Hag sees this season as being Eriksen heavy, that he can do a lot of things with Eriksen, and Eriksen will be a kind of bona fide starter. You said there that you thought that he might be more of a sub. I don't think he was going to come to Man United for that. I think if he was told that he was going to be on the bench for the season, he'd have stayed at Brentford.
No, I was going along the lines of 70-75%.
And it still might work that through the season. Like he might come in and out a little bit more. Like it might change. It depends what happens with Casemiro and how Casemiro fits in there. What does Scott McTominay do? You know, everyone wants him sold. It's kind of like he's not going to be sold. He's going to play games. Fred's going to play games still. So it's that mix, isn't it? And finding the right mix. But I think with Eriksen, simply because he can do three or four things really well, Scott, probably means that he will be more of a starter than a non-starter. When other players might have to go in out. We've already seen, haven't we, Fred? Fred's energy game will fit certain games, but already the manager's gone, you're going to go and sit on the bench. Because you just don't keep the ball well enough. So Eriksen's is a ball retainer. So is Casemiro. I think those are the two who will be the starter at the base of the midfield.
Does Casemiro get a start at Leicester? Because United play Leicester at about 8 o'clock on Thursday night, UK time, right before the transfer deadline pops up. And what changes are you expecting here? Maybe one or two? I think you can't really change the defence at the moment. What are you expecting from this one?
After the Liverpool game, said that I hope and I think that Ten Hag will just stick now with a lot of this. What he likes, he'll say, good, do it again and do it again and do it again. It would be a bit weird to kind of go to Leicester, a team themselves kind of struggling with their own identity and how they're playing, and not take advantage of it with what you've got. So will Casemiro start? I think this time, probably yes. But I said in the last game, probably not, because I think you're still integrating. It's a bit like Anthony. Like Anthony might be ready for Arsenal, but you're playing the best team in the division at the moment. Is it the right time to integrate a player against a really good Arsenal team? No is the answer to that. Give him 10 or 15 minutes at the end. That's the right way to do it. So Casemiro, we know that he's ready in terms of his fitness. So that's a big plus point here. And he's had the whole week, but he's had over the weekend and now and going into this game to work through the tactics, the sports science bits and bobs with the manager. I think he probably will play at the base of the midfield and they'll build from there. They'll try and see what they can do against Leicester. Leicester are kind of primed for the counter-attack. You know, you can do that the way Leicester want to play with their midfield being pretty high and playing through Vardy. So I think Casemiro will be there to kind of help guard those runs that the centre forward makes for Leicester. And then you can break off that, can't you? So I can see, I think they're trying to form a partnership now between Martinez, Varane and Casemiro to be the real kind of cement in the team in the middle of the park. Because you need that to build off to allow your attackers to go and do their work.
You know, I've been trying to build a team without having that foundation there for...
for guesswork. Yeah, they've been trying to do it with guesswork for years, haven't they? They'll be kind of going, We want to do this, but... we're just not going to buy the right players for it. So they've bought Casemiro. They've spent an incredible amount of money on him. Doesn't matter now, the money or the wage. Put that away. It's now about the player, isn't it? So he fits what they want to do. And now they've got to actually go and do it. And he could arguably be a much more important signer than a ball progressor. Because if he actually helps you stop conceding goals, he himself can progress the ball and play it to other players on the pitch that can get you goals and assists.
You're feeling more optimistic now then, Rob. You know, two games in, United had just lost 4-0 to Brentford. They were bottom of the league. We were talking, God, how low can they finish here? And now all of a sudden they're eighth. And, you know, not in contention, but things are looking a lot brighter. Leicester are bottom of the league now. Are we expecting Man United to go to Leicester and win again?
I expect them to go there to win or try to win at the very least. Whereas last year, I think the difference was you go to Leicester and you think probably going to lose this.
Yeah.
Because Leicester will play the ball through the channel and Vardy will run like a madman between him and Harry Maguire will go, and that would be that end of the game. But you're not in that place anymore. I don't want to pretend that I'm some football zen master. I'm not. Absolutely not. I get as stressed as anyone else. But I've looked at it the same way from day one with Ten Hag as I look at it today. This is all a work in progress. And with works in progress, you're going to see some horrendous stuff, but you're also going to see stuff that you like. And it takes time to iron it all out. It really does. So all of these games now are about building towards the future. You know, we've just made the third biggest signing of all time in Man United's history. He's about to go over the line and be done. He's not played a minute yet. So what is the point in kind of feeling good or bad about it? It's like we need to see it. Put it on a football pitch and Ten Hag, show us what you know about this boy. You know, you've brought him here. You demanded from day one that Man United paid a huge fee for him. Man United have done that for you now. Now turn it into football results. And of course, when we say results, we mean victories. So I feel calm about it, Scott. That's what I'm going to say. I felt calm about it in pre-season. Then we had that blip with the two games and it was horrible. And it's like, oh, here we go again. It's, you know, this is like some form of like repetition that goes round in circles with Man United. And we still might see some more of that. I'm kind of ready for that. But at the same time, I think we've got a much better football team to start this season than we had last year, either to start the season or end it. I'm just quite pleased that it's fresh blood. Like, Anthony doesn't know anything about Man United last year. And Martinez doesn't know anything about Ronaldo last year or this year. And that's how you move it all on your project. On you get new players that really, really want it. And I think that we're getting there. I think this is a good window. I think 225 million is a good amount of money to spend on a new manager trying to implement his own philosophy.
I think balance is the key word for me. It just looks as though now the signings that they've made, or they will be making, Anthony expected to be confirmed. If it hasn't been already by the time you're listening to this, there's balance there.
And I do hope that kind of down the season, we kind of can look back with hindsight and go, the best thing that happened to Man United was losing 4-0 at Brentford. Best thing, because it burst the bubble. It made Ten Hag go, you lot are a nightmare, so I'm going to sort this out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And here's some new players. And here are my tactics. And you know what? You're going to go and run 13K and I'm going to run it with you. You know, these things have to happen in a certain order in the world for them to work. They cannot be just done like off the top of someone's head. So I think we're going to look back at that and say, right, that was a game where Ten Hag learned his lesson very early and said, right, now we need to have different fundamentals at play. And I think that's why the Casemiro deal became important. And I think this is why the Anthony deal has become really important for United, is that they've had this small window of looking at everything and going, right, we wanted those players, but now we realize we really need them. Like, we need them, or this season's going to be mid-table. So I think United are back in the conversation now for top four, because you go look at Chelsea, they've spent so much money and they look a mess still, you know, and it's going to take time for Tuchel to sort that out. Arsenal and Tottenham blow hot and cold. City and Liverpool are blowing hot and cold for them, for their standards. So this could be a very interesting season if Man United get it right now at the end of this transfer window and at least have 11 players without injuries. They can help you win football matches against your more bog-standard Premier League sides.
We'll see how it goes. Man United play Leicester on Thursday night, which is also transfer deadline day. We've spoken all about transfers that United are expected to complete or will have completed if you're listening to this later than we're recording it on Tuesday morning. Anthony will sign from Ajax for around 100 million euros, including bonuses. Martin Dubravka will sign for United as well. There's links to new strikers. Frankie de Jong won't go away, and we'll see how it goes, because we're not going to be back for another show now until the transfer window is closed. Maybe United will pull off another miracle in the next few days. Maybe they won't. Maybe they're just happy with what they've got. Rob, thank you very much. We'll see you on Friday, and hopefully we'll be talking about another win for United. Speaking like I'm confident all of a sudden, which is weird. You can subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, Google, Spotify, and the likes, and watch us on YouTube twice a week on Tuesdays and Fridays too. So head over to the channel, A Promised Land, A Manchester United Podcast, and subscribe. Join the community, hit the like button on this video, leave a comment as well, and the link should be in the description of this episode if you're listening on a previously said audio platform. And get us on Twitter, @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B. and at PromiseLandMU for the show. Rob, thank you very much. We'll be seeing you soon. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. Until next time.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.